men have always been very resourceful when it comes to finding sexy fun in a sometimes hostile world. Before guys found each other on apps and websites, they figured out how to hook up creatively.
Today, Jack Ryan, TV host and creator of The 10% Show, Chicago's very first cable access TV show for LGBT folks, joins us to talk about the evolution of men meeting up for sex, from cruising the street back in the day to the latest hookup apps.
Jack came out in the age of disco and hasn't stopped dancing since. Join us for this and all the hot news. Performance artist Misha Badasayan announces he will have sex with a new guy every day for a year to explore horniness and isolation.
A man is arrested after police discovered jars full of penises in his apartment.
Chris Pratt's perky nipples.
And Cooking with Drag Queens reaches its Kickstarter goal.
It's time to set this kitchen on fire. I am Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Come on, season one, Cooking with Drag Queens. Let's set the kitchen on fire. Woo, we did it!
Yay! Yay!
12,430 is a taping of the show. Over $430 over our goal, which means it's seriously going to happen.
We have 223 backers and 4 days to go, so it ends midnight on Friday. And now we have stretch goals.
Uh-oh.
Have you been doing your Kegel stretches, everyone?
It's time to get flexible.
Nothing like a nice stretch.
I just want to say, Mark and I are deeply humbled by your donations and your enthusiasm, and especially the video testimonials, not just by famous drag queens, but by drag queens of all backgrounds and ages, from 14 to 400. That's Lady Bunny. She's a vampire. And, you know, really, this first critical phase of Cooking with Drag Queens, getting there at this early, you know, we're 5 days left to go, or 4 days left to go?
Four days.
Just goes to show how important and vital this show is and will be. We cannot wait to introduce you to some fabulous new drag queens and get to know your favorite gals even better. Now, here's where it gets going to be interesting. So before we finish this campaign in the next 3 days, we're asking folks who donated already to double it.
Double it.
Double
your
pleasure.
Pleasure.
Yes. Double your fun tea.
Fuck
tea.
Twins. And double your donation.
And why am I asking them to double the donation?
Well, because if you do that, then we can do longer shows and more shows.
It doubles the queens we can introduce and showcase in season one. So instead of having a certain, you know, eight, for we can have 16. We can have a drag queen. If we raise enough money before the campaign ends, we can have enough drag queens on basically once a week for the rest of the year. It can be an ocean of drag.
It can be a lot of drag.
A tsunami. Only instead of drowning and for death, you'll be living, giving life to these girls. So please take a moment and share the Kickstarter project with your friends again on social media. And if you can, please double your donation so we can do as many shows as possible.
Tweet about it, share it. If you can't do that, you make a comment on the Kickstarter, because Kickstarter looks at those kinds of things and says, hey, what kind of traction does this project? How are people invested in this thing emotionally? Is this something we want to promote? Because they haven't lifted a finger so far.
They haven't lifted a finger, but you guys have. Mm-hmm. And really, this is, I mean, when they say crowd source, it is a crowd of only 223 people.
Which I think is incredible. The average donation is $50.
Yeah. So if everybody who gave 50 can then do 100, you'll get two t-shirts, for example, and you'll get the satisfaction of making Cooking with Drag Queens a banquet of fun, a smorgasbord of sumptuousness.
A feast of fun.
A feast of fun, if you will. Okay, so today our guest is Jack Ryan, TV host and creator of The 10% Show, Chicago's very first cable access TV show for LGBT folks here in Chicago that ran in the early 90s, right, Jack?
Well, actually, from 89 to 93.
So a while back.
And it's great to be here.
Now, Jack is here.
Glad to have you, Jack.
Thank you.
Jack is here with us to reflect on how much media and sex for gay folks have changed.
That's right.
But also how much it's changed us.
Oh, yes.
Now, Jack, what year did you come out of the closet?
1974.
I love how you said that so
I was like, 1918?
It feels like it. 1974. That sounds like such a long time ago.
That's 40 years.
Well, it's kind of like, it is a long time ago, and it's yesterday.
Mm. Where were you when you came out?
I came out in the bathroom. No, I came out in Cleveland, Ohio, a wonderful place.
Is that where you're from?
I lived there for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was there during that time that I came out from, 73 to 80, actually. I lived there from 73 to 80.
How old were you?
I came out when I was 21.
So you're really young. In 1974, to come out at the age of 21 is a big deal.
Actually, that was the average.
Really?
Yeah. I remember reading something recently by Andy Hom of Gay USA, and he said that in 1974, the average age of a person to come out was 21. Now, they're coming out. Like 10.
Yeah.
Kindergarten. Right, exactly.
But there's still people 30, 40 years old still in the closet.
There's people in their 60s. Mm-hmm. I knew somebody that was receiving Social Security before they came out.
Damn. And what was the first time you met up with a man for sex?
Oh, met up with one specifically or just happening? Like
intentionally did it. Like you said,
I'm going to go out and find somebody.
I need a man, as Grace Jones sang.
And maybe a man like you.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's very good. I love Grace Jones.
Yeah, she's on the back of your iPhone. Yes.
Wonderful.
I'd have to say, like, having a date or looking for somebody, probably 75, something like that, because I came out in November of 74.
Tell us the circumstances of that encounter.
In a lovely nightclub.
So it was a gay bar.
A disco.
Was that back in the 70s? Was there a distinction between bars and discos?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nightclubs, bathhouses.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We had a bunch of different things.
You quickly name us? This was in Cleveland?
Mm-hmm.
I guess for people who live in Chicago, what was the gay bars in 1980 in Chicago?
1980 was, yeah. Oh gosh, there were a lot.
They don't exist. None of them exist anymore.
No.
But say the names. Because
Carol's.
Bistro. Mm-hmm. The Readout. Little Jim's.
That's still in business. They're just closing this week.
Oh, that's right.
It's changed hands. The bar is still there.
Right. Yeah. Little Jim's. And then there was a place called the Swan Club for our lady friends. And
for
the
lovers of the labia.
Lady loving ladies. there was still a perennial, the closet.
And in 1974, 1975, gay men mostly met each other in bars.
Well, you know, back in those days, now I'm sounding like I'm 1,000. It was just, you know, we were kind of ahead of the head of the group, if you speak globally, because, you know, Europe, the scene was mostly on the streets.
Okay.
But here in the States, the happenings were at clubs and discos. Like a club you'd go to and you'd just sit and drink and cruise and have fun with your friends and gag and see who's there and that kind of stuff. But when you went to a disco, you had to have everything all together.
You had a lube, your poppers. Yeah.
No. You had to have the cocaine with you.
That was at home, or your future host would supply those things.
So the bars were to socialize, and the discos were to meet up men for sex.
Yeah, mostly.
And
well, it wasn't. Well, discos, yeah. You know, it was to party and get crazy and work it out.
And so if you went home with a guy, it's usually when the disco closed.
No, if you were a smart kid, you were working as soon as you hit the door.
But some people are like, okay, there's a half an hour before this club closes.
Some people are like that, right. Yeah. Okay, it's time, we got to do this. But see, me and my friends, we'd go out to get crazy and dance our heads off. I mean, we had great music.
You also had great drugs back then.
We did.
What drugs were you taking?
Roar 914s.
What is that?
Listen to them, audience.
I Rovers?
Can't believe that they're not knowledgeable about one of the foundations of gay and lesbian culture.
What is it?
Roar 714. So that's what
I have to Google that one.
Oh my God.
What are you talking
is
about
that like
here?
Quaalude.
Oh.
Why don't you just say Quaaludes?
Well, Quaaludes. They don't make Quaaludes anymore. They stopped making Quaaludes.
What is a Quaalude for people who don't know?
A Quaalude is a psychotropic medicine. You know, I'm doing the quote marks now. And it used to help people that were sleep challenged.
Okay, so it was a drug that doctors prescribed to people who had a hard time falling asleep.
Only the lucky
but
ones.
But it kind of chilled you out and made you relax.
And then if you
relax.
Mixed it with a cocktail or
oh,
something.
Oh, yes, that was the way they had to go. Yeah. That's the way they were administered.
So is this just like Tiger Woods' Ambien sex?
I'm sure Ambien isn't half as good as Quaaludes used to be.
Because it'd make you loopy and chill and relaxed, but fun.
Yeah, totally fun, because my friend had a real script.
A prescription.
Yes. And so
I love that you still know the slang from the back in the day.
I do have half of my brain left. Jesus. But he'd have a real script, because there are lots of phony ones going on. Mm-hmm. So he'd do a whole one. Uh-huh. I can't believe I'm talking
Black
about
Beauties,
this.
Right? Weren't they called Black Beauties?
No, that was Speed.
That was Speed. Methamphetamines that the military gave to its soldiers to keep them awake.
Yeah, that's how they had the Blitzkrieg, was methamphetamines. And okay. The Japanese, the kamikaze were all
but
taking
is,
those.
But are those Black Beauties, are those the same drugs that like a meth addict would smoke today? Or is that a completely different thing?
You know
thing?
What? I don't know. Okay. I'm not sure what they would smoke. I'm not even sure that they make black
So you had speed
anymore.
Pills. You had pills to chill you out. Did you guys do cocaine?
Well, yes. Okay. It was the 70s. We did everything.
LSD. Marijuana.
Coke,
and it was real cocaine,
marijuana.
Not the stuff
you know this
today.
Song. Did you ever sing this song? Marijuana, LSD,
yes.
LSD. College kids are taking it. College kids are making it. High school kids are taking it, and you sang this in an elementary school. Why can't we? Oh. Why can't we?
I do remember that one.
Sounds like something from the 60s, actually. Or what was that big quote in Boys in the Band? Give me meth or give me death.
You know? Really? They said that in Boys in the Band?
Sure.
Well, most of those actors died.
Yeah, sadly.
From HIV.
Yeah, sadly.
And then this. So in 1974, there's no any STD you get. You get a shot of penicillin and it was
and
gone.
And you'd see somebody you knew at the clinic and go, hey, what's happening?
And how many loads did you take? I'm not going to ask you that question.
I won't answer it.
Now, did you actually like the hanky coat? Did people actually use the hanky coat?
Yes, they did.
Is that like a joke?
No. Yes, they did. There were a lot of different codes back then. Hanky codes were one of them. And the placement of the hanky along with the color was a way to communicate on a subliminal level so that people could tell what you liked or what you didn't like.
Because right side's the bottom, left's the top. Is that right?
I always mix this up. No, right is your butt's right is the dominant part.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
The top.
So like if you're right-handed and you were to stick the
people
the
could get confused.
Handkerchief on your butt, then that would be the right side.
And also the location of your keys.
Okay.
What would the keys do?
The keys were also an indicator of sexual positions.
Like oh, if you're the top or the bottom.
Right.
So you'd put your keys like on a little keychain on your jean belt?
Yeah, and some people...
I'm a top. Look.
Some people would wear them in the middle for obvious reasons.
Oh, boys, I got a big keychain.
And you know who had
I'll
giant
hold the lock
keychains
if you turn the key.
Were lesbian. Not that they used them in the same way, but in the 70s, our great bulldagger girlfriends, they had huge keys.
So the keychains were kind of
another
code.
Yeah, another code.
Sure. So if you were a lesbian with a big set of keys, what the hell does that mean?
You were butch.
Oh, you're like a handyman, like Schneider in One Day at a Time.
Exactly.
Miss Romano, I'll help you with anything you need.
Exactly.
Okay, so you're going to the clubs.
Oh, yes.
If you were a red hanky, you were into like
fisting. So if you were on the right side, you were fisting top. On the left, you were fisting bottom.
Exactly.
So all those hanky codes kind of got you in touch with what you were into. But in Chicago, the turn of the century, men used to wear red neckties
and
wear
red carnations. Okay, I wasn't there at the turn of the century.
But you did a cable access show in the 80s, which some of those people were still alive back then.
Barely.
Well, yeah, I guess they would be. They would have been old men.
Old.
Because the Chicago History Museum just did an exhibition about that.
I was there. That was great.
Wasn't that great?
It was great.
And so they would walk around, before there was even a gay neighborhood, they would walk around downtown wearing red neckties and red carnations.
Right.
And then kind of wink each other.
Well, the people clocking red ties was the big thing.
Was red ties that unusual?
Yo, yeah. And the over the top was the red carnation paired with the red. That was outrageous.
Did straight people notice or know that?
You know, they never get that stuff.
So it was a pretty successful code at the time.
Yeah. Anything that helps you communicate without getting your face busted, successful.
Because for a lot of people don't know that Chicago was one of the big cities in the country that right after the Stonewall riots was able to sort of have its first gay pride parade right after the Stonewall riots. And a lot of gay bars were able to be out in the open.
Right.
And that was because Chicago was a Democratic stronghold. And President Nixon wanted to crush that.
Oh.
Right? And so part of it was going to the police and saying, we're watching you. Don't fuck with the gays. Nixon, of all people.
Who some people say was a closet gay.
But the thing was, though, I'm confused because Nixon was a Republican.
Yeah.
But he wanted to destroy the Democratic stronghold.
He had no interest in gay liberation. Right. He just wanted to fuck with the Democrats.
And it was, who was it? D'Amelio wrote a book on this, right? So you can, that's our source.
I see.
And so.
John D'Amelio.
So I guess, you know, there was, were there personal ads or magazines being?
Well, that came later in the early 70s.
Okay.
Well, in the 60s, they had delicious muscle magazines that you
Physique,
could.
That weeklies.
You could check on at drugstores. To this day, the aroma of the drugstore takes me back.
Like going to a Walgreens gets your
bones. Are you talking about the ones where the guys would wear posing straps?
Yes. And they would have these unusually worded ads, especially under the roommate section.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they were all coded.
Did you ever run any of those ads?
No.
Did you know anybody?
I was a young kid back then.
So it would be like 42-year-old white guy looking for somebody to share the bottom bunk on
something along
like that.
Those lines.
Write to me here, and we'll see.
It was you had to know what to look for to really clock them. And it was hot.
I'm getting excited right now.
Hello. And the thing too is saw all those trashy paperback covers too.
All the Pulp Fiction ones.
Right. Those were great. You know, my stewardess sister's a lesbian, you know?
I read one of those lesbian Pulp Fiction ones that was written like pretty recently. It was kind of an homage to that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't really get off on girl-on-girl sex, but this book was actually quite hot. Uh-huh. I was like, that is sexy.
They had some very good writers on a lot of those publications.
Yeah. So magazines like Tomorrow's Man, Physique Pictorial.
There you go. Anything with pictorial.
Mars, Vim.
Yes.
Grecian Guild Studio Quarterly.
But you remember, there were some great pioneering publications at that time, too. Like, there was one called One. Are you familiar with that?
No.
It's a publication called One, O-N-E. And I think the ladies had one called...
Two.
One was...
Three. No.
One was actually featured in Sports Illustrated. They did because it's like their whatever anniversary special they're having this year. And they have an old magazine stand with like some of their very first Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And then if you look up in the top corner, you see a couple of issues of One magazine.
They would be handed in between people, you know, because so many people didn't even have access to it, where they would just hand it to other friends after they had read it.
So you'd read it, jerk off to whatever it is you could jerk off to, and then pass it on to somebody else.
Well, I don't know if it was more sexual or more political, because remember, we had they had the Mattachine Society back then. And
this was a gay rights organization before the Stonewall riots.
Oh, way, way before.
From the 50s.
And their approach to bringing about political change was to show how respectable and normal gay people were protesting in suits
and
dresses.
Chicago's on the historical point of this because in 1924, we had the very first gay rights organization, and I wanted to remember it for it was some Society for Human Rights, I believe it is, and that was born here in Chicago in 1924.
Sounds very much like HRC, Human Rights Campaign.
Was that Gerber or Hart? I was right. It was Gerber, right? Who formed that organization.
What the one in 1924? I'm not sure.
Well, in the Planet of the Apes, there's the Simian Rights Organization.
Yeah, Gerber went to Germany. He's like, oh, I love all these homophiles in Germany.
That's right.
And then came back here. And our gay and lesbian library is named after him, and a lawyer who used to get the gays out of jail when they get caught having public sex.
It's funny that the word human has always stood for gay. Right. It's
in
like
some ways,
because it sounds really weird. If you really think about it, I'm like, it sounds very, you know, like I'm an alien from another planet and we're working for human rights.
But you know who popularized that phrase was Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh,
in the 40s.
Who was rumored lesbian. To be a closet lesbian.
Right.
Never verified or.
I think they're pretty sure she had a relationship with that
woman. She had a very nice relationship with someone named Hitchcock.
And she was married to her cousin. Because she was a Roosevelt, too.
Right, distant cousin. What they call them, kissing cousins.
Yeah.
Now, after the Stonewall riots, there was a rise in LGBT publications that were mostly advocacy, political.
Some of them were just handouts.
And handouts, flyers.
Printouts, right.
But what's interesting is that I noticed this, and I don't know how far back this goes, that a lot of the liberal or alternative newspapers that were not specifically for LGBT politics, they made a ton of money by running personal ads.
Oh, yes.
So here in Chicago, you had the Chicago Reader. Mm-hmm. In Austin, Texas, you had the Austin Chronicle. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, you had the Stranger. And these publications go way back.
Right.
That they made their money was not from advertising, but from running those personal ads.
Oh, my gosh.
Especially, and they were mostly populated by gay men.
Especially The Advocate.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember when they used to have that special section in the middle of their magazine. That was their bread and butter, and that's what kept the lights on for a long time.
Did you ever meet anybody through those kinds of things?
Of course.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
What was the first person you met through, like, a personal ad, and what year are we talking about here?
Oh, God. You know, I can't even, I have no idea.
So many dicks ago.
Because I remember when I first came out, I was 18 years old, and I was living in Austin, Texas, and the Austin Chronicle, you could, like, run free personal ads, but to check your messages, you had to pay $1.99 a minute.
Yeah.
And then also to respond to the personal ads, it cost money.
Yes.
And, you know, I met some really fucking hot guys through that.
Well,
that was the first time I had sex with, like, men that I was, like, really excited. Because, you know, a lot of the gay guys that were out on my college campus tended not to be the kind of men that I'd be attracted to.
I gotcha.
I couldn't relate to them.
What a very nice way to put that.
I couldn't relate to them because they were ugly.
Oh, thank you. Or they were so flamboyant I could have lit a cigarette off of them.
And some of these guys that I met, you know, and some of them were kind of rude or weird, but other guys were really smoking hot. And we would meet in a coffee house.
There you go.
And one guy got me so excited, like,
uh-oh,
we went on a date to a pizza parlor, and then he dropped me off in my dorm room, and I went jogging for like an hour. And then later that evening, I met up with him and had sex with
him.
How'd
you meet up with him? You called him or
you? Yeah, we had phone numbers and stuff. Uh-huh. But then there was this other guy named Jason. And he sounded like this.
Right.
And he was like, Fausto, 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 what am I going to do with you? You know, he would leave these long messages on my answering machine. And he'd call me and I was like, listen, I'm about to take a shower. I'll call you back later. And of course, I'd forget because he was annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be like, some friend you turned out to be. If Fausto's your real name.
Oh, Lord.
And so we would like take these recordings and pass them around each other because they were so hilarious, you know. Oh. Some demented.
I have some voicemails. Yeah. Well, they were still on cassette decks that will take the paint off these walls.
Really? Because they were dirty?
Because they were so intense and hot.
Really?
Oh yeah. Don't you have stuff like that? I'll play them for you off microphone sometime.
Well, just kind of imitate it for us.
Oh, thanks. No, another time. You know, you can put your imagination to work.
Okay.
And so we had the personal ads, and then also too we had the phone lines.
Yeah, the phone lines, those people made more money than God.
Yeah, because it was like they charge you by the minute or something. It was
Interactive Mail was the name of the company. And until recently, they ran ads with the same model from the 1970s.
Probably dead.
It was like that hanging there kitty. I said, that kitty fell off the branch and is long dead. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy was this hot stock clip art guy.
He'll always be.
And he was the only model they used, and they ran those fucking ads forever.
Right.
And what was the experience like? Because that was a little bit intimidating financially, because it was like $5.99 a minute or some ridiculously high
amount of money. They could be very expensive, but it all came down to how you communicated.
Okay.
So what was your approach? What was your mind game?
And
got pretty darn good at it.
So you got fast.
So you were able to get on there, say what you wanted to do and who you wanted to meet.
I wasn't worried about the money. Okay. It wasn't an aspect. But
I don't think it was $5.99. No, it couldn't have been that much.
Well, it was affordable.
It was expensive, though.
Really?
Yeah, well, I remember
some of them were.
They ran an article about that some guys like got addicted to that stuff and went into bankruptcy.
I know. People can become addicted to so many things. And especially when HIV really came upon us, a lot of people turned to masturbating with
other
people. On the phone with other people. So,
and since like a play or then later turned into the movie Jerker.
Yeah, that's right.
That sort of chronicled a Vietnam War vet falls in love with an act wrong number.
Oops.
And they bond over the phone call.
Have you ever gotten wrong numbers like that?
You know, we used to, as kids, we played a game where we would call people randomly at night, uh-huh. and the game was to see how long we could stay on the line with them.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was like, 7 or 8 years old, me and my cousin, we called a gay guy.
Uh-huh.
He's like, have you ever talked to a gay guy before? And we're like, no, we're watching MTV. We're watching Culture Club. And he was like, you know, Boy George is gay. Oh my God, no way. And you see that drummer? He's his lover. Oh my God.
No way.
And like we talked a long time, and this guy could have, you know, fucked with us as kids. Right. And he was like a really nice, good, wherever you are, you know.
Hats off.
Hats off to you for befriending some crazy kids in Puerto Rico.
Mine were not quite as innocent.
What were some of yours?
Well, I mean, it didn't happen all the time, but, you know, you could meet somebody but it would just be a long conversation until you realize, well, I'm not going to meet a perfect stranger. So this isn't gonna
happen. The thing is, like with those personal ads or when you're on the phone, if you're going to meet somebody, you don't really know if you're going to be attracted. You don't see their picture. So I find it hard to be like attracted to somebody.
It was work. But it's the pioneers.
But there was times you probably met somebody and you were like, oh no, honey, this is not going to work.
This is not the look. Right? Well, that would happen. You know, somebody would show up and you're like, okay, go into the dance.
So when you called those party lines, did you speak in code? So order to save, you know, you had a minute to make it happen.
Now you keep stressing the expense, but nobody was really worried about that.
And when did the, I know there was Man's Country here in Chicago.
Oh yeah.
Run by Chuck Renslow, who does.
And it's still open.
It's still open. And they haven't updated anything.
You're there every Thursday from, what are your hours?
Last time I was there was the spring of 1980.
Well, let me tell you, they have not done anything.
I've heard that. I'm fascinated what it must be like in there.
Our dog's having a dream.
A little dream.
I love it when our dog dreams because he starts arguing. He's like, rup, 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 rup. And I told her.
And that was unusual.
That was my bone.
And those were unusual noises. I hadn't heard those ones before. They were a little odd. I was like, what is happening? Because usually it's. Rup,
rup, rup, rup. And they start running.
He's very argumentative.
So. Yeah. He's in like, asleep.
It sounds like the dishwasher's gurgling.
Right.
Okay. So why? I know you said that the Advocate was kept alive by the successful personal classifieds.
Oh, it sure was.
But I noticed that a lot of the gay newspapers were very hesitant, especially here in Chicago, to run a robust personal classified section.
I don't think that's the truth, because Gay Chicago,
that was all of
that
it,
fine publication,
but Gay Life, Gay Chicago Magazine, Windy City Times, and even Chicago Free Press, all kind of
Windy City Times, right? Windy City Times, it was kind of more low key, but some
and
of
you
those
know
other
when
ones.
You ask the publishers that are still around, like Tracy Bain, they take that as a personal attack.
What, that they didn't have enough?
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm just curious to know, like, was there a conscious, like, decision, or was that something that just wasn't important for you guys to pursue?
Maybe it wasn't just her cup of tea, you know, it wasn't her mindset, or...
When you did the cable access show, and this is what we're talking here in the early 90s, late
80s. Right, 89 to 92 or 3.
And, you know, cable access rules, for people who don't know, they were very weird about you making money
through any kind of advertising or anything that could be construed as advertising.
And they would scare the fear of God into you.
Yes.
If we catch you making money, you're out of here,
right,
kid.
Well, they'll just say, yeah, you can't run that episode.
Okay.
So you have to redo it.
And nevertheless, you guys got very crafty and got the gay bar Roscoe's to sponsor you.
Right. We use the same style as the public television networks such as WTTW here in Chicago, where we say, this fine program that is about to be on your TV is sponsored by, and then you can mention their names. Uh-huh. And those were very restricted. And here in Chicago, you know, Roscoe's was very generous. And I can't remember his name, that very nice man.
Flint?
No.
Oh.
Roscoe's.
I don't know. Joe Roscoe.
No.
God. I don't Roscoe know. Roscoe P. Coltrane. It's not important.
He ran it, but it was important,
it's important
to us.
But he doesn't.
Well, if it was important to you, I can remember
what he looks like. But they were very nice people. And sidetracks, they gave us some equipment and outlines. They ran our schedules. So people were very supportive.
Because one thing we noticed that used to happen in the early days of this podcast that doesn't happen anymore, maybe because we're smart about crushing it, is we'd have guests be like, win a date with me. And I'm like, you're basically using your appearance on this program to try to hook up with somebody who's listening.
Right.
Did you ever have that kind of thing happen?
We never had anything like that. We did have a bunch of unusual people, though. I have to say that.
What were some of your more unusual guests? Because it was, what was the format? It was a talk show, but it was also news oriented.
No, it wasn't a talk show. Our program wasn't based in the studio even. Because anything in a studio dies. So we always took the cameras right to where the action was. And we covered the social, political, cultural, entertainment goings on of gay and lesbian Chicago. So we had the gamut of people that would be traveling through, or even people that were living here. We had people like Frank. Are you familiar with Frank?
The P-H-R-A-N-C. I enjoy being a woman or
something.
She sang a song, Martina.
She was cool.
Martina.
She had the best crew cut that's ever existed.
Yes.
I mean, we've had the mayor.
Holly Hughes was lovers with Frank for a while.
Yeah,
performance,
I'm not surprised. We've had a lot of different people, but the most important people, though, have been the movers and the shakers, like Daniel Sotomayor. And
he was a cartoonist, political cartoonist who died from HIV and AIDS.
Yes, but that's just putting it in a few words, because he was such...
Sorry, I can't give you the full Wikipedia, people, in 15 minutes.
I just want everybody
very much involved
to know.
In ACT UP Chicago,
I just wanted everybody to know he was a big dynamic force.
Now, what's interesting about the AIDS crisis in the mid-80s and late 80s, late 80s and early 90s. Right. And one thing that's never really talked about mm-hmm. is that activism became a way for gay men to hook up for sex.
Of course, wherever there's hot gay guys or hot people, and it doesn't even have to be gay. I mean, straight groups, they hook ups all the time. Can you imagine those hot protesters, those anti-Vietnam protesters in the 60s?
Because that was a part of my motivation when I was 18 coming out. It was like getting involved with ACT UP. Good. I was like, you know, you had some hot muscle daddies in there.
Hello.
And you're like, well, they know safe sex.
Right. It's right. It was, you're doing a great, great service for your city, and you're also having a ball at the same time.
Now, so with the cable access show, you guys ran for quite a while, mm-hmm. and you managed to bring the cameras out and to locations.
Right.
One thing we've experienced it's really annoying to interview people in pride parades.
It can be.
Because they're all like, oh my God, this is great. Oh my God, oh my God.
Woo! Look over there.
Look at my girlfriend. Look at her hat.
You know? Oh my God.
And then somebody comes over like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Are you on TV? Oh my God.
Hey, we're going to meet them over there.
I know you're in the middle of an interview, but listen, do you want a beer or do you want a vodka drink? Right.
That's what a crew is for, though, because they'll
block those people away.
Block all of that away. What was difficult, and I always am so respectful of people that have this gift, is to be able to do man on the street interviews. And that is not an easy thing to do. And to be able to make people comfortable enough to want to cooperate with you is a gift. And then to be able to express yourself, you know, when you're watching television and people can just rock and roll, you know, dialogue, it all makes sense. They're not running over all their words or running over somebody else's words. That's a real talent.
One that we don't have here.
You guys are really good.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm serious.
Because you actually listened to the podcast.
For many, many years.
Oh. I appreciate it. You know, I really like to think that this podcast gives us the ability to tie the loose ends of generations.
You're a part of it, baby.
Yeah, baby.
You're right in there.
Did you get any blowback from, because you were on cable access, so anybody in Chicago could see your show, but it also was another... other places as well.
Death threats.
Really? Mm-hmm. And they somebody would just write you mail and send it to you?
No, they would call you.
They would call you at your home and say, I'm going to kill you because you did a TV show. I'm like, it wasn't that bad. Come on. Thank you. I'm not going to get an Emmy, but
and
please.
Are you cute? Now, we had our run-ins with scary situations before. But, you know, you do your best you can and try to be as secure as you can. Mm. One of the fun... It's when I look back on it, it's funny, and I was a learning experience, and probably one for you guys too, is there's parallels between Andy Warhol's factory and what you're doing, and that has to do with personal safety, because have you ever been in a situation with perfect strangers and then realize, wait, this wasn't such a great idea?
You know, we've been doing this show for 10 years, and I've never felt...
Threatened
really? By any guest. Annoyed, hated,
yes.
Ready to... Me, good. Strangle them, absolutely.
Well, but like I was afraid for my life or things were going to get weird, no. Oh. You get like weird emails now from people, but it's just, I don't know, for the most part, it comes to nothing.
Well, I had a learning experience because I was so naive in the beginning. And we had so many volunteers, and it was like a rotation of generations of volunteers. So at one point we had 20. So there was always attrition. And I realized with this one person that I had not had the best judgment, because I'm alone with this person in my apartment. And all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, this is really going south.
Well, you
what
were
was
like
happening?
A video editor or something?
No. It was just we had volunteers that just wanted to come and help do things.
Okay.
I had somebody that was doing my laundry.
Listen. Okay. I want the people who are listening to the show.
If you live in Chicago,
our laundry is done by Mark. And Mark is busy right now.
But you just ran across all kinds of people. We had people that were driving in from many miles away just to be part of it. And just to help. And
well, at the time, it was like a really unique voice out there, because there wasn't any gay people on TV at that point in time.
We were absolutely invisible. Yeah. And we were the very first to bring it here to this market.
When you saw, started to see, like, you know, oh God, I hate bringing this up.
Go ahead.
That's this TV show, Will and Grace.
Yes.
And Ellen DeGeneres coming out.
Yes.
And you started to see, like, the tide changing.
Sure.
In mainstream culture. Right. With LGBT characters and actors and right. content.
Well, that's welcome.
Was there any kind of, like, situation where, like, great, all our fun is over?
Some people feel that way, that our community is being co-opted mm-hmm. and our gayborhoods are spreading out, and that...
Because Will and Grace was really annoying. But a lot of young people, they're like, I came out and I was able to, like, my friend from high school, Jocasta, which mm-hmm. we just met, mm-hmm. she said she was able to be comfortable around gay people because of that TV show.
Sure. And in the 60s, it was having black people on TV because they were invisible.
So and I'm sure a lot of black people hated Julia.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. Or Bill Cosby or whatever. Yeah. But for people that were not part of that society or that culture, it was a door opening. And it's like, okay, I got this. Isn't scary. You know.
Did you feel like your cable access show... function on some manner of that it kind of introduced, you know, and why do you think, like, was there any kind of discussion on, like, let's make this more entertaining and less news oriented?
No, we wanted a big mix.
Yeah.
So we would put things next to each other, something like super serious, like the establishment of a new Chicago house. Then right next to that, we'd have a segment on drag queen wrestling. And then we'd have another segment about something else, and it would just all go together and blend.
Drag queen wrestling, what year are we talking here?
Fabulous. Oh, my God. That was so much fun. That was at a place called Bistro 2.
Yeah.
And you had to go up these stairs, and those kids were so creative. They came up with names like Diesel Debbie Lynn, Mildred Fierce.
Oh my God, that's hysterical.
There was a kitchen ninja. Oh my God, there were just so many people.
And they had a jello, like a tub?
No, they had a ring.
We
need to bring that back, because we went to, what was it? They used to have lube wrestling, so they'd get these boys in their underwear and put lube on them. Right. But because they're wrestling and they're not used to wrestling, and who knows what they ate that day,
sure.
they ended up farting a lot. Oh. And so basically, it just smelled like lube and ass.
Oh, Lord.
So you're just kind of like,
I've never smelled that before.
I gotta tell you, I would pay good money to see Teriyaki and Shea Coulee at each other.
It was absolutely, they would be the, and then you'd think, this is the wildest thing. And we would go backstage and interview the wrestlers, and they would never break character.
Oh.
It was so well done, so creative. But the people that made it crazy were the audience. They were absolutely insane, like cheering on their favorite wrestler and everything like that.
So it really had a kind of worldwide wrestling federation, Hulk Hogan component to it, but it was all gay and drag.
And they had their own rules. Yeah. Never, ever touch a wig.
What happened if you touched a wig? You were disqualified?
You had big problems.
Oh.
Like the ref would come over and, you know, punish you.
Did the wigs ever come flying off anyways?
Sometimes, but then they would go back on really quick.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Not the wigs.
Did they wrestle in heels?
Not heels.
Okay.
But
they had wrestling shoes.
Were they dressed like in wrestling outfits, or they like actually dressed as women? Women
in wrestling outfits.
Okay.
You know, full makeup,
so
incredible
like
hair.
Lauper, or it's like China the Wrestler kind of thing.
Yeah. They were doing it.
We had this
great energy.
Did they talk? For the wrestling.
Yes. Okay.
And then they were talking and wrestling. That's really painful.
We had a great entertainer here in Chicago. Maybe you remember her, Memory Lane.
No, I don't.
She was a legendary performer, and she used to do color commentary. She did a lot of different things for different club events and that kind of stuff.
Attention, Tranica Rex. We got a new stage act for you. Then came the internet, right?
Yes.
And that started transforming everything.
It sure did.
They say that today, the reason that there are not as many gay bars as there used to be.
People are at home.
They're at home hooking up on their apps and on the internet.
Or it isn't even just hooking up. They're just reading and spending time on TV. Everybody's turned it. It's something that brought a lot of people together, but it's also separated a lot of people.
What was your first internet experience for you?
It would be AOL.
Okay, America Online.
Right.
And they used to charge by the minute.
They charged by the minute.
And it was expensive.
As hell.
What, do you remember how much it cost?
Oh, gosh. What was it? And maybe it was $2 a minute. I'm not sure.
So it was cheaper to call the part, the interactive mail, the party line.
But they gave you free discs, though, too. Oh, like, yeah. So you'd get like 30 free minutes.
And they give you
or
lots
something.
Of minutes. What? And each month had different, you got more minutes, too. Okay. But the rewards were unbelievable.
They're saying that the reason that AOL still makes a profit all these years later mm-hmm. is because a lot of those people from
never
way
left.
Back then
never left
or didn't cancel their subscriptions.
Right. Oh, I still use them as my email because it's like, why bother? I mean, I have other email accounts.
Jack,
but
there's the thing called Gmail.
I know.
So you're still paying AOL?
No. It's all free now.
Okay.
Because they charge for a long time and then all of a sudden the market
changed,
and they realized, well, we can't charge anymore.
That's how I met Mark.
Really?
I was in a chat room chatting with this really attractive guy who sent me one of those pictures from the Walgreens.
On AOL?
On AOL.
Oh.
A picture frame stock clip photo,
yes.
You know? And he kind of looked like Mark. He had a widow's peak, brown eyes, really handsome face.
Right.
I said, I would love to wake up and see that face every single day for the rest of my life, you know?
My.
And I went on, and so I was at a bar, at a sleazy bar, and I went up to Mark and I said, don't I know you from the internet? And he was just like, what the hell are you talking about?
I'd been on the internet, and I had been in chat rooms, but I'd never actually met with anybody.
Those chat rooms were on fire.
This was 15 years ago, so I dragged Mark back to my place to show him the picture, and Mark's like, that doesn't look anything like me, but we had sex anyway.
It worked. His little ploy worked.
I eventually met with the guy that looked like Mark, mm-hmm. and it turned, I think it was Dietrich, after all these years. This is a young African-American man mm-hmm. who looked nothing like his photo, mm. and he kept talking about how he knew Oprah Winfrey.
Oh.
And you know, in the date, and I was like, okay, yeah, but whatever, you know Oprah, sure. Whatever.
Had he? Oh, okay.
We never know, you know.
Gotcha.
But so we went on a date, and I was like,
"You don't look like that picture." You,
that was a white guy. No offense, and you're a black guy.
Right.
He's like, "Oh well, I you know, in the
spitting
photos,
image.
Photos. I photograph very light." I was like, "He had straight hair.
Right.
Yours was curly."
Right.
It was crazy.
Well, you were a big dater then back then.
I was very sexually active on AOL and in the chat rooms, and a lot of the people that I would meet up with were out of shape, you know, people who sat behind a computer desk all along.
Right.
And I remember when it changed, when the college guys and the athletes, you know, the party boys, when they got on it, that's when the action started.
I gotcha. So, but you would go on dates and stuff.
Yeah, it was always a date.
Oh.
It was always
it
there
was
were,
never
very
just for
tasteful.
You well, go over for hookups.
Well, the thing about it is like
I went, when we got together, he's like, "Let's." I'm chatting with this guy. It sounds like he's gonna be hot. Let's bring him over. I'm like, "All right."
But that was like a year after we had known each other, you know. But it's like for early on, it was very like scary.
Oh,
because you couldn't see what the person looked like, so you had to take their word for it.
Yeah, because a lot of people didn't have scanners back then either. So
well, you had to go to like the copy
store or something.
Yeah, Kinko's and bring a slide.
Right.
And get that slide scanned.
Right.
And it was just so much work.
I know. It seems like it's the Middle Ages now.
And now, you know, we have I said this to somebody on an app. I said, if only they're like, I lost all my photos when I lost my cell phone. And I said, if only you had a device with a camera attached to it that could allow you to take a photo of yourself. If only.
They should create such a device.
Yes, definitely.
Turn the phone around and there's this little camera lens.
What was funny about those chat rooms is there was a category for everything under the sun.
Like, what was the category? Because there was Chicago M for M.
Right. And there, so there were
one,
like 20,
two, three, four,
right,
five.
20 of those. And a lot of the rooms were specific to specific cities.
Uh-huh.
So they're LA for Men for Men or so on and so forth.
I knew a friend who hooked up and started a relationship based on a Disney AOL chat room.
Oh, my.
And one of them was a little person who plays a... he's an elf in the Radio City Christmas spectacular.
Disney is always a place for guys to come together.
You could either meet up in the city specific,
right.
Or by interests that were kind of gayish.
Oh well, yeah, because
Madonna.
Exactly. I had some great conversations with people about music, like Hendrix or you know, your favorite band. And then you could like really like talk for hours and hours and hours because people were sharing things that you didn't even know.
And we don't have that anymore, do we?
No, I don't think so. Is there an example of that?
No, because
well,
now
Facebook.
You have things like Reddit and you can have conversations there.
But it's not the same because now it's like, there's something, well, Reddit is probably it, but there's something lost in the ability to quickly get in a chat room and start a conversation. You know, I describe it as like a river. When you're ready to dive in, the conversation is already happening and you can participate.
Well, I would, I'm a member of a lot of different groups on Facebook, and there's one called Hollywood Babylon. There's Joan Crawford Babylon, and you just jump in.
Yeah.
And people are telling you things that you know, well, my brother worked with Mitzi Gaynor and so
and
on
AOL
and so
started
forth.
Introducing Instant Messenger.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the end of it for us. Because everybody stopped using the chat rooms
right.
and started message them each other. And it'd usually be like ASL,
oh,
age,
I hate
sex,
that.
Location.
Right.
And then
into question mark.
Pick. Which is, you know, basically, what is that, 20 years ago, and right. now we have apps, and they're still doing that.
Oh, gosh. I remember all those awful, and as soon as people would start doing that, or they go size, and then you're like, okay, that's immediately a turnoff, and this is a bad, you know, bad reflection on this person.
Yeah.
But, you know, people, you meet many superficial people.
So we went from AOL chat rooms to AOL Instant Messengers, and mm-hmm. then we started seeing specific websites targeted to men meeting up.
Right.
And that was gay.com.
I was just going to say that one.
Adam for Adam.
Right.
Manhunt.
Mancunt. And the lesbian one, Fishnet.
No,
I'm just kidding.
No, there's a million. Men for Sex Now. Why are we giving them free advertising?
Right,
because most of them, you know,
they're out of business.
They're scrambling.
That's true,
because they've, you know, they've lost a lot of market share to the apps.
Oh, that's true.
But for a while there, you know, Manhunt was king, and they were raking in the money
and
giving it to the Republican Party.
Right? Don't anybody forget about that.
And it seems like, you know, you go on Manhunt today, and it's just like
it's an aging population.
It's just so sad. Tumbleweeds.
Or,
and it's like,
or how about this? You'll see somebody's picture.
Yeah.
And you're thinking to yourself, I think I saw that 18 years ago.
It's the same photo.
Right. The exact same photo.
You know, you might know your photo's old when there's dust on the photo.
When you're inside a Model T.
You're like wearing, you're in a, you know, disco suit.
Yeah.
With bell bottoms
right.
in it.
I swear to God, people are so lazy.
What was the experience like the first time you got on say, Manhunt or gay.com? Because my friend Jason and his partner, Michael, they met on gay.com and got married.
Oh, my God.
Well, they're not married yet.
Well, they'll probably never.
It does happen. Yeah. I mean, people meet people at the baths and spend the rest of their lives together. So, or the grocery store.
Well, I heard that grocery store in Boys Town was very cruisy.
It was.
And
I'm
especially
sure
in the 80s.
It's called The Village.
Yeah. But like, the people were literally, like, go shopping for groceries several times a day to bring home not just the bacon.
The premier one was Treasure Island.
Yes.
That one's. And a friend of mine used to say, it was so well lit. Everyone looked good.
I'll just be hanging out in the meat section.
Well, they had like a salad bar. This is before Whole Foods even existed, right?
Exactly.
And so people would kind of go to the salad bar and kind of loiter around.
Well, you're just keeping an eye out. You know, you're picking up your vegetables, and maybe you might pick up your next boyfriend.
And you're like, well, because one thing I do when I'm shopping at the grocery store, I always look at what people are buying to see if I'm
something odd.
Because if they're buying like chili, you're like, this guy's not bottoming for me. You're like, this is not going to happen.
Well, if you see a lot of junk food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. But usually I'm not looking at someone's food.
So do you feel like the gay hookup apps, I mean, sorry, sites like Manhunt and Adam for Adam and gay.com,
they're waning.
Were they game changers at the time?
Well, yeah, because people were busting out of, these closed areas like AOL. And coming out more into the internet. Because remember, AOL was a web browser, too. It was like Marshall.
It was a proprietary system.
It was Marshall Fields. Well, it wasn't proprietary. Well,
oh, yeah. Oh,
keyword
gay.
But those were, you know,
for a lot of people, that they didn't realize that you could go outside of AOL and go browsing the internet.
Right. And then once that happened, then they realized we can't charge anymore.
That's right.
And there was a whole brand new world out there.
And then it came Netscape and Internet Explorer and all these web browsers.
Remember all those?
Yeah. It's so weird to say, you know, this is kind of stuff. And one site that's particularly interesting was the rise and fall of Craigslist personal ads, especially when it started getting used for sex trafficking.
Right. It's enormously popular still.
And Craigslist, I think, were they successful in shutting down sex trafficking? Or
no. You mean human trafficking?
Yeah. Well, they were prostitution.
You're right. Yeah. They did a lot. That's something they have to always watch for. Yeah.
But I mean, they were having problems with like kids being brought in from foreign countries.
Oh, I know.
Prostituted on Craigslist
I wouldn't be surprised if that still didn't occur.
Sure. And why are the guys on Craigslist so sleazy?
Are they sleazy?
It's just like, if you compare it to other sites.
Oh, yeah. Well, anybody's going to be sleazy. Right.
But it does have a reputation.
Yeah.
The other thing about it, though, is it's one of those things where you can put anything out there.
Which is something very American, mm-hmm. I think.
Why is that?
Because to be completely out there. No, they're not shocking people. They're saving time.
Efficient.
Right?
Let's get right to the bottom of it.
Here it is, kids. You know.
And have you ever hooked up with a guy from Craigslist?
Who hasn't?
I have never done anything with Craigslist. I look at it and I just go. Uh-huh.
I check it every now and then, but I'm always just kind of like, no.
It just felt weird, you know. And the interesting thing is that when smartphones first started coming out, and this is 2005,
yes.
2006,
yes.
And then geolocation started appearing, and apps like The Looped.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time that anybody was actually using their location and advertising it so they could find another person nearby to have sex with.
Right.
This is predates Grindr and Scruff.
I see.
And it was really crappy. And then this guy put together this app called Grindr and Joel Simkai, who was a frustrated internet developer.
Is he a philanthropist at this point? I wonder.
I don't know if Grindr's making the money that you think he's making.
Really?
Yeah, because the thing is, though, too, how many people actually buy the extra?
Well, you know, the man that runs Craigslist, that guy gets paid. I know that's monetized quite a bit. I don't know exactly how they do it.
But I hope Joel Simkai he's a nice guy, and also Johnny Scruff. They're good people. We've met them and interacted with them.
That's nice.
I hope they're doing well, and I hope they're able to save their pennies, because it seems like, you know, reflecting on all this stuff, there's always
A bell curve.
A bell curve, yeah. Right. Easy. It comes and then it goes and something else replaces it. And so Grindr was kind of clumsy and awkward.
But
and
it was first to market.
First to market and dominated. I remember at the South by Southwest Music and Media Conference, they had a panel for Grindr and it was packed with straight people who were like, I want to get on this app train.
Yeah. Right, we want this.
And it was like, the great thing about Grindr is that you could create it. You didn't have to create an account to use it.
Right.
You could just log on.
And here you are.
And here you are and bring in the dicks. And I remember my first Grindr hookup, and it was like, it was with a dancer from the ballet.
Oh, my.
And it was like, I was terrified through a app going to somebody's house and meeting them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God, this person's going to kill me.
I'll tell
but
you.
But you'd already met people through personal ads, through phone lines. Why was this technology any different?
Because it was so intimate.
I'll tell you a little story if you don't tell anyone.
I won't tell anyone.
All right. This was AOL.
Okay.
And that we really hit it off, this person and I. Very, very interesting person. Well-traveled, artistic, a musician, so on and so forth. He opens the door. It's Frankie Knuckles.
The DJ,
yes.
The father of house music,
of course,
who just recently passed away.
You hooked up with Frankie Knuckles.
Yeah.
And was he playing his music while you were having sex with him?
No. Well, it was just like really a wonderful night.
You knew it was him when he opened the door.
As soon as he opened it, I'm like, because at first I was like, oh, well, wait a minute. So I said, you look just like Frankie Knuckles.
You said that to him?
Of course.
Yeah.
And he said, maybe I am. cool.
Well, you made out and kissed Rufus Wainwright.
Oh, well, I
lucky
met him at
you.
A bar.
Oh, well, so,
at a bar.
Yeah, and right. I knew who he was. He knew who I was.
That's right.
And he wanted you to go on tour with him.
Oh, my.
But he's Mark was like...
I had midterms. I said, I cannot take your bus to Pontiac, Michigan.
I see.
Thank you, though.
Was he a good kisser?
He was a wonderful kisser.
I could bet.
You know, we kissed for a very long time.
Very nice.
And he signed a CD for you.
He did.
Oh, he's a cool guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I heard that he goes around bars, and before he hooked up with his partner, he would go up to hot guys like Mark and be like, if you come home with me, or if you go on my tour bus... I'll write a song about
That's
you.
That's cheesy.
Well, maybe he did write a song about you.
Cigarettes and chocolate milk.
But that's a
cheesy
line. I'll
have to let you figure out which one it is.
And back in the old days, people would send out their drivers or assistants, because I know that, who sang Chances Are?
Chances, Frankie Chances Valli.
No.
Nat King Cole.
No. Chances Are.
He was a black dude, right?
Yeah. As soon as we came up with the name, you'd know immediately. Anyway, he'd send out his driver.
Well, if I had the internet here, I would just Google it and figure it out.
It was...
You don't have it.
I do have the internet.
Johnny Mathis. Right.
He's still around, isn't he?
I know he is, yeah.
So he would send out his driver and say, pick me up a boy.
Right.
Or a man.
Well, we saw that in the HBO documentary about Liberace's life.
Sure.
Yeah, that if you were rich, a limo driver was a very handy thing to have.
Right. Well, a lot of celebrities, they send out... you know, helpers to snag people.
Now, there's an app that's been trying to sort of steal the thunder of Scruff, because right now Scruff dominates the male hookup market, and that's Tinder.
I've heard of Tinder.
Well, Mark the straights and I call, are using it, too.
And that's what's making it interesting, is that it's based on your personal data from Facebook.
Oh.
So if you don't have a Facebook account, you can't use it. But what Mark and I have noticed is that it attracts very young people. To the point, and
that's
people
what I've
who are
heard.
Who are not very savvy when it comes to hooking up for sex, and they're really, really primarily interested in a relationship. So we call it instead of Tinder, we call it Kinder,
because they're very young.
But there's also like people who are like just come out of the closet, and they're like, or just come out of a relationship, and they're just, you know, new to the scene, and they're just, you know, feeling it out, and so. It's interesting, like, because I posted shirtless photos of myself on there, and that got negative response. And so I had to put on clothes.
People said funky things?
No, just, you know, not enough people liking
they're
you.
They're not interested in, like, this. They're interested in the sex.
It wasn't
but
negative,
they want...
it was just little reaction.
Well, it's the way that Tinder works is if you like the person and they like you, then you can start interacting with each other.
Oh. But you can't send, like, your dirty pics. Over, you can't picture a message
you can't
them
send
there,
anything.
So you have to like take them off of that app. So you either have to get their phone number or use another app like Kick or WhatsApp to contact them.
Right.
So I don't know where all this is going, but it to me, I guess the one lesson that I can say is like enjoy it while it's there, because soon enough something else is going to come.
Well,
to change everything,
and also time marches on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you. Your cable access show that you you ran that for a long time, and it's an invaluable piece of LGBT history.
Thank you very much.
But it's trapped by an evil lesbian.
We're going there, and
the
I
Gerber
didn't
Hart,
say that.
Well, I'm saying it.
Okay.
The Gerber Hart Library right now, you donated the videos to the Gerber Hart Library, and the library is... It is
safeguarding
holding,
them.
It's, safeguarding them.
They're
for,
all in captivity
for deterioration, so nobody can actually watch them
it's
or look at them.
So rabidly protected and sequestered away, as to the point where people cannot go and watch them. And even if they try to make an appointment to go see them, they're not allowed to do that. I wonder if it's changed now because they have a new board. But for many years, there was a gigantic roadblock. Might as well pin the Iron Curtain.
You've tried to get them and to digitize them and put them on YouTube so that people can kind of
just
get a glimpse.
Just put them on the net because I would have liked to have a copy of these myself just so I can leave them as my legacy to my family and friends maybe. And also to just put it on the net, because that was the whole reason why I donated them to the Gerber Hart Library, was to make them accessible to everybody. maybe even people that weren't alive when a lot of that footage was made. And there were a lot of important interviews and activities, and it's invaluable. And I'm very frightened, I hope this isn't the case, that the tapes are disintegrating after all this time, because videotape does not last forever.
Yeah, so the nice thing is 3/4 video cassette is pretty good at being archival.
Right.
And anything that gets digitized has to be sort of updated, you know. I mean, who knows if YouTube and Google will be around 20 years from now.
Right.
We don't know.
Well, there'll be better formats probably.
But like sometimes we had a lot of video content of ours that we had made with Outworld.tv.
Yes.
They went bankrupt and disappeared overnight, and we lost all our video content with them.
Wow.
And it was lucky that I was sneaky and downloaded our interview with Brent Sopel of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Right.
That's the only video that. But we did tons of interviews with people before Pride parades for several years.
Right.
And those are all gone.
And that's the lesson we should leave for everyone, is to have copies of your thing, share them, but make sure you retain your own copy.
And that's why we're cooking with drag queens.
Very good. If you support it, you get your own digital download.
There you go.
You get the digital. You become the archivist. And we all archive it as well. They'll be available not just on YouTube, but as part of archive.org, a nonprofit organization that archives things for posterity. And it's free, free for anybody to use.
Yes.
And, to make these things available for the future, because it's, who knows what'll happen. If Mark and I got run over by a truck tomorrow.
God forbid.
God forbid, that'd be the end of this podcast. we have some comments from our podcast with Peaches, 17 years a showgirl, which, by the way, we're going to be there on Saturday in San Francisco.
Very
if you're
going
to
nice.
Check it out, come say hi to us during the intermission. We'll be hanging out upstairs with all the drag queens. If you're at the Castro Theater, walk upstairs during intermission. And that's where everybody kind of socializes, and we'll be there. So come talk to us.
And Dylan Ong writes, always love episodes with Showgirls reference. 4 years ago, after listening to Feast of Fun and the many episodes on Showgirls, we named our German Shepherd mix that we adopted Nomi. She's my Facebook cover photo now.
Oh, we should have named Jesse Pinkman Nomi Malone, too.
Oh. I love Showgirls.
But it's a boy dog, not a girl dog. Well. But I didn't want to misgender our dog. Even though he has had his nuts cut off.
Gender reassignment.
And our show with Brian Sweeney about Guardians of the Galaxy, Guardians of Depravity. Artemisia, one of our lovely listeners, writes to say, hey guys, okay, the monkey photo discussion got my attention. I'm a photographer, a professional for 3 years. I loved it, but the changing world has made it very hard for photographers to make a living. People use camera phones for everything, and they may look okay, but a professional photographer's skill to work magic, that's the real difference. Now, the simple copyright rule is who fired the camera, unless there's an agreement. For example, shooting a pic of lightning, which, by the way, you don't need a strobe sensor to do, by the way, it's just a hell of a lot easier, the photographer gets credit because they set up the trigger mechanism. Same for a motion sensor. If you have an assistant, you're paying, it's basically the same as if you pulled the trigger, because it's the assistant is your mechanism. However, do have contract agreements just to protect your ass. So a monkey triggers the camera, the monkey, if that monkey had rights, would probably own the photo. Or the owner of the monkey could be considered the owner of the photo. Now, if the photographer wrote a contract, if the monkey shoots a photo, I own the photo, they could save them themselves. But here's the catch. If it's found out that he really did shoot the photo, he could own it, but his credibility is compromised since he got caught in a lie. Myself, I love to take photos apart and find out how they're done. I can look at UFO photos, ghosts, Bigfoot, and tell what's been Photoshopped, because I do Photoshop art myself. It's all art to me. I don't even blame the photographer for their lie, because photography has gotten so hard to survive in. I do blame them for being sloppy. Art and making money is now so hard, you almost have to break the rules to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was talking about the monkey copyright photo ruling.
With a lawyer
at Market Days, and he's saying that it's going to, if it hasn't been ruled already, it's been ruled in favor of the photographer, because the mechanism there was him creating an environment where that could take place.
As a monkey has no rights.
And it's nearly not about the mechanism, it's about the intent, said the copyright lawyer.
Right.
So regardless, but it's interesting that a lot of people are defending for the monkey or for the fact that he doesn't have right to photography, because I think the internet has trained us to be hostile to the idea of anybody owning anything.
Except if you're a corporation, because corporations are people.
And they can own things.
Right. They can have religions.
And they can vote.
The default mode of the internet now is surveillance.
Yes.
Like, so the way that Facebook and Google make their money is by surveilling us.
Sure.
And I think that business model is going to bite us in the ass.
I hope I'm not around when that happens.
I think it's already happening.
In some respects,
they're watching everything.
I know. And things that we don't even know or realize.
So later this week, I'm actually part of a panel on the future of broadcast journalism and radio at the NLGJA conference, National Gay and Lesbian Journalists Association. And one of the things I'm pushing for is that really we need to change our business model for as LGBT journalists and niche content creators, and not look towards advertising, because advertising ultimately is surveillance. And we need to think about, merchandise and listener supported media as a way of paying our bills.
I think it's a good approach, because so many industries have had to change their models over the years. Look what the music industry has had to go through.
Sure.
Where the money they make now are in concerts and merchandising. And in the old days, it was like record sales. It's like, what are those?
Yeah, bands would, like, if they went on a tour, it'd be like, I've hit up 13 cities this year, and that album will be real great. And
tickets, $15.
It's weird that we will happily pay $125 for a Madonna t-shirt, but scream bloody murder for $20 for a Madonna CD.
Right.
And, we just talked to one young friend of ours who paid $500 to see Cher in concert. Ooh. But I'm guessing that kid did not pay for any of Cher's music ever.
It's probably not.
Well, whatever people enjoy the most is what the traffic will bear,
Well,
on the show with Cameron Esposito, Javier writes, "Welcome back, Cameron. We've missed you. Very excited to learn about your success." And he also wanted to go on and tell us that RE Father Figures, he says, he and his partner met a guy snowboarding in Colorado 2 years ago. He has since moved to San Francisco. He's exceptionally attractive and very young. One day we were having a drink, and I realized I didn't understand a word he said. I understood each individual word, but not collectively. I told him I don't speak millennial. It then occurred to me to call him Bambi Bambi. Speak English. Without missing a beat, he called us his gay father figurines.
Good for him.
I love being a gay father figurine to my lost, gorgeous millennial Bambi.
Oh, that's funny.
That's a really sweet sentiment.
I know, isn't that sweet? I think it's hysterical that he said figurines. I wonder if he was making a joke. Or did he just think it was funny to say, or he didn't. Did he think a figure was a figurine?
On tomorrow's podcast, we're going to have Parker Marie Malloy and possibly one of the organizers of the Michigan Women's Music Festival to hash it out once and for all what's going on with their situation where they don't think women who are transgender are really women, and whether they can include all kinds of women, regardless of their sexual or gender experience, to be included in this festival.
How's that going to happen?
That'll be a great podcast.
Listen, honey, we've done all sorts of things in this podcast. So the things, miracles can happen, and they do happen on Feast of Fun. And so Lisa Vogel, the founder and producer of Michigan Women's Music Festival, has responded, telling the people on the internet, get your facts straight.
But still goes on to kind of skew the facts and skew people's ideas of what's really happening.
Well, and I read her response, and my feeling about it is, it's like, listen, stop with the double speak. Obviously, you're not welcoming transgender women to your festival. You're not doing panty checks, but you're not saying all women are welcome. So to just try it once. You've been doing this festival for a gazillion years. Just do 1 year, and say, you know what? We're going to try something new.
You know where they would keep them? They would keep them across the street.
Well, they would set up their own. They would set up right. their
protest.
Right, exactly.
You know, their protest. And I think they got tired of doing that. I think they're just like, eh, it's not
annoying
anymore.
Mm. Why not just say, we welcome all women. We welcome all women from all nationalities, race, you know, class, cultural, sexual, right. gender backgrounds.
Whether you were born with the, you know, a male assigned genitalia or not.
Because it just feels like doublespeak and condescending.
Separating.
And this idea that because you're under fire for your antiquated views, that somehow other music festivals are not also being scrutinized as well is also insincere. Look, you know, obviously everybody cares about your festival and they want to see spaces that nurture and cultivate LGBT people to be better. You know, this is for lesbians mostly or for women who love women or women who have experienced all sorts of things throughout their lives. And why not try it? You know, why not just change your position and see how that feels?
Right.
Try it for 5 years. You know?
And then if it ruins the sacredness of it, then just
And I'm guessing it wouldn't. It wouldn't do it at all.
Or take a vote. See what your festival goers, how do they feel?
Yeah.
Well, you'd get a lot of people that with no idea. Or you'd have to get the people that are actually there.
Right.
But the people that are actually there probably it's going to be biased towards.
It's hard to say.
You know?
Maybe people are more advanced and open-minded than
And they say trans people come every year and it's no big deal.
The trans people are already there going to this thing. So why not just say you're welcome?
Right. Well, they wouldn't let leather women in for a long time, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why were they? Because they're vegans? Or
no, it had something to do with violence or the idea.
Like S&M and bondage.
Exactly.
It was impure.
So
was,
I don't know if they even let
I'm sure now they do.
In the old days, they would not.
Interesting.
Oh, that Michigan Women's Music Festival has been a thorn in the side for 30 years.
Well, and listen, you know, it's like I enjoy that Burning Man is out there, but it's not necessarily something that I might. You know, I would have enjoyed going when I was 21 years old, but now it's
if you were on the right drugs, you'd like to go. You'd go because most people are on drugs.
You know, sometimes I feel like there's not enough drugs to make somebody who's annoying not annoying.
Oh well.
And a lot of people
you
are
might
saying
have a point.
There's a loudness war. I don't know if you've experienced this throughout the years that bars and events and pride celebrations are getting louder and louder.
I've read where you've discussed that before, and I do believe that they are getting louder and louder and louder.
And you know, at what point when do we have to lose enough of our hearing to go enough is enough?
Well, often I'll go to concerts and they'll have places where you can buy earplugs.
And that's ridiculous.
Well, you pretty much have to go to a concert with earplugs because you're going to lose your hearing.
I'm looking at my keychain. I have my mother gave this to me as a present and she was kind of being sarcastic.
It's a small gun.
It's an earplug. It's a set of earplugs that are in an aluminum container that you can carry and they're acoustic. So it doesn't sacrifice any of your hearing. But I find it so ironic that me as a 42-year-old man has to carry a set of earplugs in order to go to things.
Well, I think that's a parallel to wearing sunscreen, too, you know, just to protect stuff and to be conscious of what's going on around you.
But people are saying that have gone to Burning Man for many years. And I don't know if this is true for the Michigan Women's Music Festival. That it's,
well, that's all acoustic.
No, they have it's amplified as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? They have evil electricity there? Created
it's like
by
the
man?
Amish. It's not the Amish, Mark.
No.
But so I'm wondering if they're next having a situation zippers. Where it's like, you know, just so overwhelming with this situation.
Oh, I remember
situation.
Once going to a Cramps concert. I thought, I couldn't wait. I couldn't, after an hour, I had to get going.
And you know what bothers me is that whenever you criticize this or raise a fuss about it,
they call you old.
They call you old.
Oh, well, this
and it's
was
like,
a very long time ago.
Yeah.
I just felt like I was putting myself into some kind of dance, you know, like.
You got to put toilet paper in your ears when it's like.
Well, you got to make your own priorities. And as my friend told me when I was 16, she said, look, your main priority is your own safety and comfort. And that's the words I live by.
You said that in the 70s and 80s, there used to be lesbian activists who would infiltrate organizations.
Oh, yes.
to fuck with it.
Oh yes, to
and not a necessarily constructive way.
Oh no, not at all.
Who are these women exactly?
You know what? They used to have a name here in Chicago because they used to have meetings that I had a friend that used to go and tell me about what they. It was very doctrinaire. It was super duper politically correct, like taking to the nth degree.
So give us an example with the Horizons.
Well,
the youth center.
Well, one time at Horizons, when it was still called Gay Horizons, they were a group of people that were totally against accepting any kind of donation from the Playboy Enterprises. So this involved tens of thousands of dollars. So there was a big political fight over at Horizons and people saying, we can't take that money. We need that money. We can't take it. We need it. We can't. We can't.
Playboy exploits women.
Right. That was their point of view. Until the point where they were successful, this group, and said, Horizons said, no, we will not take tens and tens of thousands of dollars. And then all the people that were against receiving that money promptly left.
So they were kind of raising a stink, and once the organizers of Horizons gave in to their demands,
right.
They lost interest in keeping the group afloat.
Who knows what their intentions were?
Okay,
you know,
but it wasn't a situation that were like intentionally trying to subvert the group. They were just pests,
basically. In my own show, the 10% show, we did have a couple people that did want to subvert things. And behind people's backs, they were trying to foment tension and conflict. And we're on this side of this issue. We're on that side of this issue. And he's an awful person. And then all of a sudden we realized when all of this conversation was coming, hitting the light of day, they got to go.
That's why I say, listen, just because we don't agree on something doesn't mean we can't be friends.
Well, that's part of the reason why it's like Fausto and I, we basically do this show alone.
Hello.
You know, except for like regular guests that come on.
Right.
You know,
why? Because otherwise.
No, I just think there's people that, you know, a lot of people have ulterior motives and they're not always frank. They, you know, we get lots of offers to help for different things, for different things.
You have to be very careful.
But then you just, you know, as you see and you kind of vet them a little bit, you're like, oh, that's why they want to do it. There's an agenda there.
But I did want to just leave this quick anecdote about the show, and I sure wish there was more of it now, where we really concentrated on making sure that our show was completely co-sexual. So we wanted to have as many lesbians as gay men. That was very important to us.
So ratings were not important to you?
Who even knew what the ratings were? But
that's a little diss.
People watched. I mean, I'm sure people came up to you when you're out in public and you're like, oh my God, I love your show.
They lived for it. Yeah. I mean, we had people that used the show to come out.
Oh.
Teachers.
Sure.
We had
So ratings were not important to you?
Not really. Because we had an important person in the sports area here in Chicago named Peg. Oh my God.
Peg Bundy from Married with Children.
No.
Loved her.
Peg Gray. And all the women out there will know who that is. Well, she went to school and all of us after she did our segment and the woman, all these kids started saying, we saw you on TV. We saw you on TV. Are you gay? Are you gay? Are you gay? And Peg was able to, you know, get them all together, quiet them down and say, okay, it's time to go back out of recess, back into school. Then it was knock, knock, knock on her door of her classroom. And the principal says, I have to talk to you. So Peg and the principal go to the office. And the principal says, you know, we've gotten a lot of telephone calls about your appearance on the 10% show. And she said, I want to tell you that we support you 100%.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I know. So a lot of people came out. But
I was expecting a sad ending.
No, but my fun story about working with gays and lesbians is I was ahead of everything. And so so many of the lesbians would come up to me in soft voice and say, you know, I've never been around gay men before. This is great. I would get that a lot. And then I'd get the men and they'd say, you know,
I've never been around lesbians before. This is terrible.
No. And they would say, this is so great. I said, I know, it's great. But, you know, there are a lot of sensitivities, though, when you're working with them. A whole bunch of different people.
What do you think about the sort of the visibility and the rise of transgender people in the last couple of years?
It's terrific.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's wonderful.
Did you cover much of that on the 10%?
More so in the entertainment area. I'm trying to think of segments.
So you did more like drag queens, gender nonconforming.
Yeah, continental contests. And
so it was all performer-oriented.
Yeah, I think so.
Because what's really exciting, I think, in the last couple of years is that we're starting to see people who are, you know, not performers sort of speaking their minds and providing an alternative perspective to
it's great
entertainers,
you know, strippers and burlesque dancers.
And a lot of you know, exactly. And a lot of us are learning things about a whole group of people that have been kept invisible just like we were.
Yeah. And I think that's it's a really exciting time to be around.
For sure.
I want to draw attention or a little salute to a performance artist by the name Misha Badasyan. He's a 24-year-old Russian Berlin-based performance artist who, beginning in September, will have sex with a different man every day for an entire year.
Why wait till September?
And I'm like, Mark goes, welcome to my world.
Oh, please.
The controversial performance art piece called Save the Date will explore Misha's feelings of emptiness, so persuasive in today's hookup culture, especially for gay men, by sucking as many dicks as he can before the year's up.
So he's trying to have as much sex as he can to show how empty his life is.
Misha is quoted to say, non-places are supermarkets, shopping malls, airports, and other largely anonymous spots where people lose a sense of identity, yes, and feel like they don't belong. Uh-huh. In these places, you don't have to talk to anyone or feel a sense of belonging. That creates loneliness, which is, as a Russian person, attracts me very much too.
He goes, eventually, I will be like non-place. Like, so people will use him up so much that he'll be like empty and nothing.
A husk.
So he's already signed up on internet sex sites to get volunteers for his act, and he's also been tested for STDs, and he even has a condom sponsor.
Oh my.
You know, we need to do this on this podcast. If we could just harness the friction of the sex, it could fuel a whole city.
Yes.
If you could just attach a generator to Mark's hips.
Shit. There's a 59-year-old guy in Croatia who has been arrested. They're calling him the penis collector. And they found large jars in his house of penises and formaldehyde. He works as a nurse at a hospital and is described as a family man. And of course, the hospital is outraged. And they're looking into, like, how did he get all these penises? We assume they're from dead people because, like, I would imagine the live people that were missing penises would have said something.
I would think.
You know?
Excuse, nurse, my penis is missing.
Quick question.
Is this supposed to happen?
Where'd this go?
Right.
Well, you know, maybe it worked in an animal. It's not an animal hospital. It's a human hospital, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They're human penises.
There you go.
Sounds so like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Dear listeners, if you lose your penis or you wake up tomorrow and it's gone, please call a doctor, police officer, or ask for help.
Exactly.
Don't feel like you have to do it on your own. A public service announcement. And a lot of people, I don't know if you've been following celebrities throwing ice water on themselves.
Yes, I have, for ALS, right?
Yes. Do you know what ALS stands for?
I can't say it.
I don't either.
It's ulcerous.
See? This is
Lou Gehrig's disease,
oh,
guys.
Yes,
arterial sclerosis.
Yeah. Okay.
Arterial lateral sclerosis.
Okay.
Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, a disease of nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord that control voluntary muscle movement. And the only reason that I know this is because I'm reading Wikipedia.
My poor cousin died of it. It's a terrible way to go.
I was just going to say it's a
very was married, sad. Had two children, and they were very young when he died.
Who's Lou Gehrig?
Lou Gehrig was a baseball player.
Okay, so you do know that.
They even made a movie about it.
Who's Chris Pratt?
He's some Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, Gorge.
So recently, Chris Pratt cave into, you know, basically the idea is if you're a celebrity.
Right.
You cover yourself with a bucket of ice water.
Yes.
And that draws attention, and you videotape it and post it on the internet.
Yes.
If you choose not to do that, you have to donate $100 to...
You don't have to.
Well, you're supposed to, because someone nominates you.
Oh.
And so Chris Pratt covered him, you know, he was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so he opens up a bottle of Smirnoff ice and drinks it, and you're like, oh, that's stupid. And then he gets covered with ice water.
Oh, that's
And
right.
his nipples are so perky.
Is he the skinny Pratt or the heavy Pratt?
He's a little bit of both.
He's up and down, actually.
Yeah. Well, because he just finished taping or filming Guardians of the Galaxy, right. and he's in post-film mode.
Right.
So he's a little muscular and a little bit chunky.
He's married to somebody famous. I forget. Yeah.
Don't she doesn't exist in my mind.
You know what a great movie that just came out, though? I saw it and I had to call from where I was and tell all my friends, don't see it until I can see it with you. Get on Up, the James Brown Story.
I haven't seen it. Peaches Christ run absolutely to adored see it. It.
Run. We should all go right now.
Okay, let's
just leave.
See it.
Just leave
this
everything recording.
Over. Right. Podcast is over.
We won't, go to James Brown.
We won't even use the stairs.
Oh my God.
It's incredible.
Jack Ryan, it's a pleasure talking about all this stuff with you.
Very nice being here.
Will you take our ALS challenge and pour a bucket of ice water on
Of course. It's been a great honor to be here. I'm a longtime listener, and it's just a wonderful, surreal experience.
Oh, that's right, because you've been listening to the show for a long time.
Many years.
What is it that got you hooked?
Well, you know, you guys are kind of talented. I'm sure you hear it all the time.
I got many skills besides podcasting.
But you guys really work on it. You really turn it out.
Oh, thank you.
You do. And see, you know, from the business and the experience I've had in advertising and broadcast, I know it when I see it.
Oh, go on.
Don't stop.
Remember, folks, the real talent here is you, the listeners. Your intimacy, your engagement is what makes the show happen. It's not the size that counts. It's what you do with it, aunties. And because of your support, we are able to make Cooking with Drag Queens a reality.
Yay.
And you can help out by going to tinyurl.com/cookingwithdragqueens. Leave a comment, share it on Facebook, let people know what's out there. We've got, I guess, well, the time you hear this, 3 days left. Let's kick it through the roof.
Let's your friends.
Stretch that out.
Do it one more time.
Let's stretch that out.
And double your donation to double your pleasure.
And I want to remind folks, too, we can't do this podcast without your help. So if you're not a premium subscriber yet, please consider signing up today at feastoffun.com/store.
We got fabulous t-shirts, darling. Okay, Hunties, Shantae. Reading is fundamental, and the shade is strong with this one. You know, our sweet dog, Jesse, got into a fight with a rabbit.
Oh.
As we were leaving town to go to Saugatuck to hang out with the Indian prince. And Rabbit won, Jesse lost.
And us out $500. Oh,
and the dogs bled all this blood. It looked like a homicide scene in the apartment.
No, it was bloody murder.
And so I took a bunch of pictures of it and posted it on Facebook.
I saw.
And I said, what should I do with the body? And Vivacious wrote, feed it to a queen.
And then a listener wrote it, and he said, lap it up, Vivacious.
Oh, and then Vivacious responded, no, some other queen.
Oh, you have Vivacious's voice down.
No, some other queen.
Mother has arrived.
Very well done.
Well, it's kind of like weirdly Jamaican, but also very authoritative and regal in a certain sense.
And it's basically the voice that you would make if you've been strangled for many times throughout the year.
And also been around the block a few times.
Mother, if we can stretch Cooking with Drag Queens, I want Vivacious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to push Mindy, our casting director. I'm like, bitch, get this. I don't call her bitch. Mindy's a very
you could if you wanted to.
She's a close friend of ours.
This woman.
She's a producer for a very big TV show here in town, and she's volunteering her services to help us cast it. And so she knows talented girls when she sees them, but she's also very good about like getting an interesting narrative going.
Mm-hmm.
And Vivacious is somebody who, like, I feel like we just scratched the surface with her.
Two hours, we just scratched the surface.
It really was. It felt like it just didn't go far enough.
There's a big story there.
I know. And we don't know it yet. But if we're able to double the donations, double your pleasure.
That's right.
We can bring...
Double D's.
You bring Vivacious to Chicago, honey, and get her to set this kitchen on fire. And we were, I just want to leave one last story here. We were at Saugatuck, which is basically the Fire Island of the Midwest. I want to do a shout out to the Dunes Resort that were very hospitable to us. Gave us 5-star service. And we were hanging out with some interesting gay men at the Dunes Resort at a party. And there was this older gentleman and a younger gentleman who I best describe as Anna Nicole Smith and her late husband.
Oh, my.
So this older gentleman was very, you know, 1 foot in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger man was a blonde, muscular bodybuilder from Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were holding hands. And I was like, oh, do you guys, are you guys friends? Or, you know, just trying to start a conversation. Basically, I'm trying to steal the young man away from
him. Oh, my.
I'll just be real honest here. Uh-huh. And they were like, we are married.
Oh.
And I said, oh, you guys are married? That's wonderful. Can I? And they, you know, he's kind of pointing to his wedding ring. I said, can I see the rings together? And so they hold up the rings. And I turned to the younger one. I said, why is his ring bigger than yours? And the younger one was like, what? Totally upset about it. And I was like, I'm just kidding. I said, but really, how did you guys meet each other? And he was like, well, we are married.
There you go. He was smart.
And I was like, well, did you guys meet here? Did you meet on the internet and stuff? No, I flew him to my country. Then I come to America and marry him. I was like, oh, so you guys are legally married. You're able to stay in the United States. He's like, we are married. And I said, so you're basically a Russian mail order boy, is what you're saying. And he says, yeah, da. I said, well, listen, give me the catalog because I want to order two of those myself. One for Mark and one for me.
Uh-huh.
He was had a great sense of humor. And it's like, it just goes to show that love blossoms in the most unlikely places.
Very true.
And don't always, you know, and the one thing I want to leave people with this discussion about hooking up for sex throughout the ages is never assume somebody is not going to be interested in or unapproachable.
Right.
Marilyn
Monroe said that all the time.
What did she say?
Because she said nobody would come at, you know, they would have a hard time coming to her because they all thought, oh, well, she must be involved with the most important people in the planet. She says, I was always very lonely.
Oh, the pretty ones are always the lonely ones. That's how you get them.
Right.
And no means no, too. Yes. Someone says, you know, man's rejection is God's protection. If they don't show any interest, they're probably doing you a favor.
Keep rolling.
That's right. Jack Ryan, people can find you on Facebook.
Yes, I am on Facebook. And I am, I wish I had a great new project I could get a plug for, but I don't have one at the moment.
But we're going to, I guess, is it okay for us to link back to your Facebook profile?
Sure.
So you're not going to get, you might get some Russian mail order brides who are on it.
If I'm lucky.
They're really affordable. This guy said he paid for the other guy to come to his country.
Which is different.
Yeah.
That
I was like,
different.
Never, you know, never assume.
Yeah. Maybe he was just like, it was maybe his way of, you know, well, that's called priming the pump. When you pump water, you have to put a little water into the pump to get the water out of the pump.
Or are you saying that that he was still a gold digger, but he spent a little gold to dig it later on?
You know, to stake your claim.
How long have they been together, did they say?
We are married.
Well, the other thing, though, too, I mean, just getting citizenship is worth it.
Well, yeah.
He was like, you know, in Guardians of the Galaxy, I am Groot. You know?
Oh, I see.
That's all he could say is we are married.
I gotcha.
It was like, oh, so what drink are you having? We are married. Oh, you're going to have a vodka and soda. Great.
We are married.
We are married. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.